Overnight, protesters clashing with police. There were dozens of arrests for violating a curfew the mayor of Newark imposed outside the ICE detention center at Delaney Hall. Anywhere within a half mile is off limits from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., and police moved in to clear the streets. The arrests capped a combative weekend with some protesters setting fires and using barricades as weapons. Mounted police and officers in riot gear pushing them back. Tensions began over Memorial Day after detainees launched a hunger strike over living conditions they call inhumane. Visitations have resumed at Delaney Hall, but state health officials say they've been denied full access to inspect the private facility with a government contract. New Jersey Governor Mikey Sherrill sent the state police to take control so federal immigration officers would back down.
We've seen what has happened with ICE across the country. I won't let that unfold here. Having worked with New Jersey State Police and local law enforcement, I know how well trained they are, the best in the nation. I trust them to follow our Constitution.
Homeland Security says there is zero tolerance for rioters, but the mayor of Newark says lawful protest is necessary, Mary, because the conditions inside this place are so bad. Mary?
It's certainly a tense situation there, Aaron. Thank you.
Okay, so that was the ABC News, and this riot has been going on for 14 days. The problem is the griefs, the grudge, the grievances against this facility are just not true. And I'll tell you why I say that. The Daily Wire did a deep dive on this, and they found out that the commissary sales, that's what the prisoners have as a commissary in regular prisons and in detention centers, the commissary sales at Delaney Hall surged 161% during the so-called hunger strike, rising from $11,498 on May to $30,000 on June 1st. So snack sales have jumped. The detainee population, meanwhile, has fallen from 724 to 621 during that same time. So it just gives you an idea of how off this is. And they said there was a hunger strike. A Department of Homeland Security tweeted a post that said the hunger strike hoax was actually just Delaney Hall detainees trading nutritious meals for honey buns and hot Cheetos. It's time for sanctuary politicians to drop the political theater and work with us to get criminal, illegal aliens out of our communities. So we're going to talk about this today, but I'm going to talk to someone who's been investigating who's paying for all of this, organizing all of this. Ryan Morrow from Capital Research Center will join us to talk about that. And I think it's important that you understand what's actually going here. But first, well, we talk about how to save babies all the time. And their mothers, because preborn focuses on the mom and the dad, if you'll come and talk to them, because they actually provide ultrasound photos or images of the baby in the womb. And it's amazing. It's so powerful. You know, even if it's not your baby and you see that, it's just an amazing, really to me, a sign of the existence of God and his handiwork. Because how in the world can you explain the intricacies, the development in the gestational period of babies to have, you know, fingers sucking and little eyes and a little cute nose. And you can sometimes even already see that the baby looks like a person, the mother or the father or grandmother or something. And it's very moving. And so what they do is powerful. And so we want to give them a shout out all the time. And they help support this show. That's the least important thing I want to tell you. But I'm grateful that they do, because I'm so grateful they're our partners. It's very important to me to save lives. I felt that way for, you know, since I even became aware of abortion when I was 21. It was shocking to me. So if you want to help Preborn provide those ultrasounds, it's $28 for one ultrasound. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, today we're going to get behind those riots in New Jersey and find out just who's involved here. Are these just people in New Jersey who heard by word of mouth, saw emaciated people coming out of the detention facility who were on a hunger strike? I don't know. And are genuinely concerned, or heard that report and are genuinely concerned. Who are these people? I think they should say that on Seinfeld, I think. No, but seriously, who are these people? And who's bringing the meals and who's providing the equipment? Who's doing all of that? Well, We're going to talk about who's behind all of it and paying for it on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
DHS is coming out swinging to defend their ICE operations at a facility that's become a flashpoint for protests. You know, we're talking about Delaney Hall in Newark. As we look ahead to an overnight curfew there tonight, families have been able to get into this site to visit today after scenes like what we're about to show you all weekend long. These protesters clashing with police, police holding up riot shields, these demonstrators holding up those like traffic barrels, you know, cut them in half and using them as kinds of shields. Protesters say they're showing support for detainees who have complained about poor conditions, spoiled food, allegations that DHS denies. Julia Ainslie has made her way to Newark tonight and is joining us now. So family visitation, Julia, has picked back up, right? But the curfew is still in place. Give us a sense of where things stand.
Yeah, Hallie, behind me, you will see some protesters, but they can't get all the way to Delaney Hall because there's a security perimeter now set up a half a mile from the ICE detention facility. And tonight at 9 p.m., there will be a curfew. The curfew started last night, and we have seen tensions diffuse slightly. We have seen some people today yelling at the people here, really New Jersey State Police are the people who are getting most of the wrath because ICE is actually back a half a mile down this road. Now, we did hear from New Jersey Governor Mikey Sherrill yesterday about the new policy, or rather, reinstated old policy to allow detainees to now have family visitation inside the facility. Sorry, Hallie, checking over my shoulder because there's a train coming, but I think we're okay here. That has now opened up more people. We actually saw some family members today on their way inside to talk to loved ones inside of the facility. And she says that she's still calling on DHS to try to address concerns over medical care and food inside.
So there you go. That's not actually a new report on what's going on, but man, have you been watching those riots? The latest last night, I saw one of the protesters hit because they were blocking the cars leaving the facility. I guess people working with ICE, and they were just savaging the cars. So the cars, it ended up like going in a group and driving fast. And so one of them got, you know, hit. I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to. And then I'm going to ask our next guest if he has any idea what that is, because there's no words. But here it is. It happened last night outside the detention center. This is clip 4. Okay, so, well, it goes on and on. It goes on all night, and it was 70-mile-an-hour winds blowing away all the Antifa tents and everything and all of their paraphernalia. It was actually fun to watch. Nick Sorter posted about that, so I thought you might enjoy that. So let me introduce Ryan, because Ryan Morrow has been investigating. Are these just garden variety people all upset about what's going on inside the facility? I told you in the opening what the gripe is about the food and all kinds of things that they've come up with. I explained that to you. But so all of these people are so upset about that these detainees are allegedly not getting proper food and medical care, but we now know that's not true. So who are they and why are they there? Well, Ryan Morrow is part of Capital Research Center. He's an investigator, a senior counter-extremism fellow at Capital Research Center. Now, Capital Research Center, just to be clear before I say hi to Ryan, political, who's no fan, trust me, of any conservatives, and certainly not CRC, describes Capital Research Center, I'll just paraphrase it, that is the go-to place for all the research on these hidden behind-the-scenes group. You might remember Scott Walter is the founder and the CEO, and Scott joined us a long time ago to talk about Arabella, which was that network of connected subversive groups, loosely connected, kind of hiding their funding, that are funding these riots and protests all over the country. So CRC says, Politico says, that CRC is the go-to place for congressmen, for the president, and they've their briefings to the president have really borne a lot of fruit in beginning investigations. So we'll get into that with Ryan. So all of that to say, Ryan Morrow, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
You told me, as we chatted before we went on the air, that you started investigating when you were 16 years old. I have to know what that's all about. That's not a normal 16-year-old, Ryan. What were you doing?
Oh, yeah, I was not a normal 16-year-old, just like I'm not a normal 39-year-old now. but I was kind of obsessed with these topics, geopolitics, Russia, Middle East, all of that, at a really young age, just because I couldn't really do anything else because I'm blind in my right eye, and family circumstances just really put me in isolation. And so that's what I got into. And eventually just one of those chance meetings happened when I was 16 years old. And I met a guy who was forming a security company, and he couldn't believe the massive amounts of notes and books and everything else that I had. And so he hired me. My first job as an intelligence analyst was at 16 years old because of that chance meeting.
Isn't that something? Well, I will just say that's how God works. That is really how God works. And the things that the losses in our life create incredible opportunities if we look for them. And it's just amazing to hear that about you, Ryan. And I said to you off the air, too, I interviewed you when you were really young, probably not at 16, but when you were, new pretty much at Capital Research Center. And I think you did your first interview with me because Scott recommended you. And it's great. It's been great to see you grow and your talent, your information. So anyway, all right.
Thank you.
All right. So this is Delaney Hall. It's the ICE Detention Center in Newark. I think it's been going on for 14 days. And then someone sent me this poster, Ryan. It says, Koseka in New Jersey, communicator. Koseka is not mobilizing to Delaney Hall tonight. This is on June the 1st. We are talking to strikers and their families to regroup. So that just one message went out and the group was gone. The crowd was gone. Now, they came back since then, but what's that all about, Ryan? Why would a group of people really concerned about what's going on inside the ICE detention facility just suddenly disappear because of one message from Koseka, New Jersey communicator?
Well, part of it is part of a plan, really. After the October 7th, 2023 terrorist attacks on Israel, which then sparked the anti-Israel protests on college campuses and then cities across the country, we at Capital Research Center basically broke down that entire network and identified over 150 pro-terrorism groups that were organizing them. And so what happened was that you had a lot of students who didn't know any better getting involved in these demonstrations and protests. Do they support terrorism? No. But the organizations that are filling their minds with rhetoric and assembling them there largely are. In fact, I couldn't find really any that were opposed to terrorism. Now, in that report, I said, just based off of their own internal communications and things that they were sharing, that basically their business model was flawed in that every single time the Middle East comes up as an issue, it then goes away, and then they have to start from scratch the next time. And so the plan was, well, we need to shift to bashing law enforcement because that's a 24/7 thing. That always works. And the end goal was an insurgency. They explicitly stated that. So they said, all right, as Middle East fades, we move into bashing law enforcement. There's more legitimacy for violence in the eyes of the people there if we can show that they're an oppressive, racist entity. And the eventual goal is insurgency. And I think that's really what you're seeing happen now, is that as soon as there's an opportunity, like there has been in New Jersey, these other groups come in and then they radicalize it and expand it and make it into a big thing. And that's why the governor of New Jersey warned about national extremist groups getting involved but they didn't explicitly say who they are, which is communist, Marxist, and anarchist-type groups, pro-Hamas groups, what people would call the far left, but they're not going to use that type of terminology.
So Ryan, this is, you can't understand it if you let it soak in for a minute. So I'm trying to let it soak into people's minds for a second. The bottom line is that, first of all, the complaints are false. And they attack police, which is the same everywhere, like in Minnesota. That's not police, ICE officers, sorry. Police too, I guess, when they get a chance. But and they work together like in a, I'm going to say dark web. I don't think that's technically true. But they have ways of communicating, and they have a whole hierarchy. But it's a ton of organizations, as you said. Can you... And they give, one group gives marching orders, and how, explain that to us, how that strategy, how the coordination happens. Can you?
Sure. So there isn't like a singular head, but when you look at the financing, there'll be kind of these points where all these groups congregate. One of them being Neville Roy Singham, who's based out of China and is married to the leader co-founder of Code Pink, Jody Evans, that is involved in all of this. And Azra Nomani over at Fox News did do a big analysis of all the groups that had endorsed the protests and what's going on there in New Jersey, and found over 100 groups involved overall. Combined revenues of nearly $825 million if you take their annual revenues and then add them all up. And not necessarily all those groups are, as bad as I described, but the main movers are. Like the Democratic Socialists of America, most people will think of like Bernie Sanders or even AOC, right, when they think of that. The group is actually much more radical than they are. They endorsed basically the October 7th attacks. They justified them when Iran was firing missiles into Israel in April of last year. They endorsed it, so they're explicitly pro Iran. which makes them pro insurgency and pro everything else that's evil. The other organizations that are involved. Some of them include the Freedom Road Socialist Organization that also endorsed the October 7th attacks, Freedom Socialist Party, Black Panthers. Hassan Piker showed up, who is openly devoted to Mao and has endorsed violence and killing people that he feels are selfish capitalists. The Party for Socialism and Liberation, People's Forum, all these are names that people won't necessarily recognize. But if you look at their leadership, it overlaps a lot of times. The funding certainly overlaps. And it's at the point where, because it is a business model, I mean, they make money off of donations. That's how you get salaries. As much as they bash capitalism, this is somewhat a capitalistic endeavor. But you don't even need command and control because they're so ideologically committed that when something pops up, like has popped up in New Jersey, they all just kind of know, like, let's get involved and let's start talking to each other about division of labor.
Well, they have one thing in common. They all hate America and they want America to fail. So it's a movement to undermine authority and destroy the country. That's how I feel about it. Do you see it differently, Ryan?
I see it the same way. Now, they may not, in some cases, they'll openly say that, but in many cases, they won't. They'll use other terminologies like no borders at all. When they refer to that, they mean so then no countries at all. I've seen that, particularly in Minnesota. Minnesota Ice Watch is a group that we exposed with Glenn Beck that was particularly militant over there. But they use coded language, resistance and things like that. The big one, if you want to really like nail down a bad group, if they refer to the U.S. as the so-called United States or Turtle Island, or they refer to it by its like Native American name for that land, that's a call for the destruction of the United States. It's on the same model as the chance for destroying Israel. Just like they say, destroy Israel, replace it with Palestine, because that's the indigenous population. They apply that to the United States, and they say destroy the United States, and then let the indigenous, true indigenous people, the oppressed people, rise up and control the place. But if they're referring to the U.S. as Turtle Island, that is a way of saying you want to destroy the U.S., because you're not acknowledging our existence.
You know, when I was in, this is 20 years ago, when I was in D.C. as president of Concerned Women for America, and Code Pink was the first organization that I got acquainted with because Medea Benjamin, you know, was appearing everywhere, and she was just so, she smiled, attractive girl. They always wore pink, but she was just deadly. They're the ones that, as I recall, would scream during judicial hearings, during a nomination process for SCOTUS and all of that. So that's the first, my first encounter really with these kinds of groups. But honestly, Ryan, what this reminds me of, you know, Mao Zedong led the revolution in China, the Boxer Rebellion, and I read his autobiography. So his goal was to just stir up trouble everywhere. And he said if there was a union strike, if there's any kind of a natural disaster like a flood or a typhoon or whatever, go in there. But what you do is you don't go in there to help. You go in there to stir dissent, like, did you see what happened there? And then blame people and stir up trouble and stir up the people, a lot of whispering. And that's actually the method that he used to take over China, just to turn everybody against each other. They always have to have an enemy. And that's how I see this. You know, they're just, they're trying,
yeah,
they're
I
going.
Agree.
Yeah. They go wherever there's trouble and they try to make it worse.
Yeah, the goal is to make the system paralyzed and then break. I mean, that's the commonality between all of these far left groups, even the far right groups, and influencers as well, is to break the system and paralyze it. And that's why they immediately go to using terms like concentration camp when they're protesting ICE. Like the first thing they got to do is destroy any nuance. It's never just like, hey, I disagree with this policy, so I'm going to protest. In some measured way, these groups always come in, and if a protest starts that way, then they make it about them, because who gets the attention? It's the groups and their types of people that come out, because they're the loudest, they have the biggest name, they have the press releases. So you can have some people who show up and just genuinely disagree with the policy and might have that nuance that's you really need for our civil society to operate. Not everything can be about, oh, concentration camp and you're a Nazi and everything like that. But then these groups come in and they radicalize it. They dominate the media coverage. They fundraise off of it, which a lot of people forget that like this is a great fundraising opportunity for these groups, and that's how they pay themselves. And that's what they've got to do. Like, the first step is killing any type of nuance to the conversation. And then a lot of this becomes inevitable. Because if you're protesting Nazis, if it's an occupying force, the implication is that more extreme measures are justifiable because you're dealing with a more extreme enemy.
Interestingly enough, it's not just these leftist, if you want to say, it seems actually kind of kind, these subversive groups. It's not just them. It's the governance where they appear. And for instance, Mikey Sherrill is the lovely brand new governor of the state of New Jersey. And this is what she did, Ryan, to help things along. This is clip two.
Last night, we saw masked individuals attack the barrier, taking aggressive, dangerous actions against Newark and New Jersey State Police. They threw projectiles, they used barriers as weapons, and lit tires on fire in the street. Police at this time were not wearing protective gear. They'd been on site since the morning to ensure that protesters on all sides, pro-ICE, anti-Delaney Hall, could safely exercise their First Amendment rights. As the situation intensified, additional support was needed. Because of their good, fast work, arrests were limited to 3 people. Let me be clear. Violent, chaotic clashes hurt everyone. They put the lives of both protesters and law enforcement in danger. They take the focus away from people inside Delaney Hall and their families. And they raise the temperature with ICE. I will ensure public safety, and I refuse to give ICE an excuse to surge into our communities. That would make the situation more dangerous and put more New Jerseyans at risk. It's time to bring the temperature down to protect public safety. The area around Delaney Hall has been secured, and the city of Newark issued a curfew there last night.
All right, just to translate, what she just did was remove all the police from protecting ICE officers from doing their duty, which is the pecking order in these kinds of situations. So she's, from my my perspective, Ryan, Mikey Sherrill and others are complicit with what's happening with the protesters.
What's funny is, as I was listening to that quote, because I didn't have the full context, is I thought she was talking about the protesters. I mean, the tactics that she was describing, those are all the tactics of violent protesters that show up at all of this. But if you're saying she was describing the police that way, then that's a complete mirroring.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? But they do have, I mean, just like in Minnesota, with Tim Walz and the mayor and all of that, they are doing this in places where the local governance is happy to have them because they're on the same page. And there's another category of people that I want to ask you about. When I first started, I don't know where I was, maybe when I was radio in Chicago, the group La Raza became known to me. Do you know what that is? Because I don't even know if they're in existence anymore.
That was the Mexican extremist group, right?
Yeah,
they wanted to return at least part of the U.S. to Mexico, I think.
Yes, but they were very, very radical. I mean, they did all kinds of bad things, and they feel like our country belongs to them. They want the map redrawn, and they did a lot of violent things. So that was my first entrance to that. But I noticed there are a lot of Hispanic names, not only people, but like the COSECA is the communication center for the ones in New Jersey. And COSECA is, I believe, a Hispanic name. And then you've got Carlos Saavedra, and you've got, what's the other one? Palmira Figueroa. I don't know. I didn't get that right. Figueroa, something like that. Do you know anything about that side of it? Because that's a whole different thing besides these Soros groups and the rest of them. Is there any link to the Hispanic activists?
I know about the tactic that you always push minorities to the front whenever possible.
Yeah.
That's been going on really a long time and is to be expected. I think you're going to see more of a merger between all the extremist groups that claim to represent all of the minority communities and saying these are all indigenous populations, and you referring to them collectively. There's probably going to be Native American spokespeople in order to kind of unite their image with everybody else. And that's how they're going to push this whole Turtle Island thing, replace the U.S. with Turtle Island. But that is part of a strategy, what you're describing, which is that in any given situation, you want to choose a representative of whichever community is seen as weaker or oppressed, because that just automatically taps into something in people's minds where if it's a white person, it's like, you're in power, so how much sympathy can I have? But if it's somebody who is a minority, someone who's an immigrant, then you can say, well, like that person represents what's going on as a whole in there, and everyone thinks everyone is like that person who is being deported, who's locked up, or whatever the issue is.
That reminds me, okay, I'm doing a memory lane thinking because I do go back a long way. So I was in Chicago on radio beginning in the 90s, but one thing I knew about, I didn't grow up in Chicago, but we knew about the 68 riots at the Democratic Convention, and that was something that Mayor Daley, being put it down in good order. I miss him in that way. I miss him. He said, no more. The police just went in and just stopped it. But what was behind all that, which we learned later, was a group called the Chicago Seven. And they were radical communists, like Americans, like red diaper babies, which I'm sure you're very familiar with. And they were the agitators. And, of course, they brought out college students who, got upset because the agitators whispered in their ear how horrible things were in the United States. And so they were kind of the cover. College students were kind of the cover for that and much of that movement of the 60s. So that's what this reminds me of. All right,
yeah.
So what do you know, Ryan, about, first of all, we've pretty convinced that they're being paid, but you have evidence of that they're being paid? The protesters.
I do not. I did look for it. I didn't see evidence that the protesters are actually getting a paycheck.
Okay. And how about all the supplies that just magically drop from heaven? I think they bring in food, meal times, they deliver food, they have helmets, they have all kinds of, things they can use for weapons. Where does that all come from?
when it gets to that real granular level, oftentimes it's self-funded or funded like through a friend. So they'll use Cash App, Venmo, they'll use those types of apps in order to do that type of stuff that's really incriminating. What's more insidious in some ways is creating the ecosystem, this ecosystem of like martyrdom for this cause of Turtle Island, of overthrowing the capitalist system. And that's the expensive part, actually, is having staff that are constantly doing that, who can organize people. And so those people are paid, and that comes largely from the registered nonprofit organizations attached to all of this. And those groups usually won't just outright say, go break the law, go destroy stuff, go hurt people. But they know darn well that the people who follow them on that, once they get to that granular level, where there's contact being made physically, that those people are going to be more radical. So they provide the justification in that whole ecosystem. Like, according to the Fox News analysis, about 70 of those groups that are involved in what's happening in New Jersey are registered as charities, nonprofits,
of course they are,
that type of thing.
501c3, so their expenses are, you know,
yep.
They have a lot of tax benefits. You know, I was noticing on this poster, the copy of this poster I have, where it shows the protesters, Libertà, Dignità, Giustizia, and then a big sign, in English, thank goodness, ICE out of New Jersey, and they're standing in front of Delaney Hall. And I see a short list of some of the sponsors, and one of them is Ford Foundation. And this is kind of an aside, but I know the whole story of Henry Ford, who really loved this country. Ford Foundation, are they in any way connected with Ford Motors?
I don't know an ongoing operational relationship. I mean, certainly branding-wise, but I'm not quite sure how that all works. I know the Capital Research Center has researched it, but I personally have not.
You know, the reason I ask is, if you know the story of Henry Ford, and also then I'm going to mention Rockefeller, they were men who really loved this country. They were honorable men. They started these big industries, and now, you know, which is what the left does, uses their, just twist things. You know, I think both of those men would be appalled to see what their foundations are supporting.
I do remember, I'm trying to remember which group it was. Ford Foundation did get exposed for funding some radical groups and then stopped. I don't know if they stopped it across the board. I would assume not. I'm trying to remember what it was. There was a specific group that I was looking into, and I was surprised to find out that they got money from the Ford Foundation because I haven't tracked that one in detail.
Yeah.
And then I saw that they cut that off after. But it was some really extreme example. And that's really one of the things we have to do with a lot of these nonprofits, is that the big funders, I think genuinely most of them don't know. And if you approach them and you say, oh, well, this is from Influence Watch or Capital Research Center or Fox News, that they just throw that message in the trash. They don't take it seriously. So the information doesn't break through. There are some that I think are consciously complicit, that's for sure. But I think in a lot of cases, they just hear liberal terminology and then say, okay, well, those guys are one of us. So they can't be bad.
Yeah. Hey, we should Arabella them. In other words, just do something under a different name, you know, and change your language. And it would be great if you guys could brief them, because there's got to be people of conscience in these big corporations, maybe somewhere.
I think about that all the time.
That would be a great new outreach for Capital Research. We just maybe need to call it something different again. But
Not even do it covertly, because I just think everything should be out in the open. But having some type of entity that, you know, that uses liberal language, because there's nothing wrong with using some of those themes and some of those words, just to get over some of those really stupid barriers that are up in that uses them to filter people and information from getting into even being considered. I think it would be highly effective, because you would just need some defections, and then that would result to more and more and more. And these people would, you know, it wouldn't be a political thing. It's not about voting Republican or Democrat. But surely big elements of these groups, if you inform them that, hey, you're funding people that want to destroy Israel or institute an Islamist theocracy, they would say, well, I can't be part of that. That's crazy.
You know, it reminds me, you know, there's, I'm sure you do probably even know the persons, I should remember their names, but a new entity where they are going to corporations, they're they're making a lot of change, difference by these resolutions by stakeholders. And they've really basically gutted, now I can't remember the thing, it's a three letters, oh, it's like DEI, it's related to that. It's just that the what corporate something and something. Anyway, they've made a huge dent in that, and they came out from nothing. One young man, whose name I can't remember, has really made
a new tolerance campaign?
It's something related to that, but I think this went before that. Dustin, I think his name was. Well, my only point is that they've made huge inroads, and they did, I think, by their campaign, expose and have corporations drop that. It's related to DEI, social and governance or something. I don't know. I never quite understood why they chose that. It doesn't fall off your tongue, but they did make a inroads. So I think that is, we're onto something here. I'm going to change the subject for a second. If you would indulge me, I have no idea what Turtle Island is. Is that from some book or what? What's Turtle Island mean?
So it stems from a reported Native American myth that was held by some tribes that the earth, or specifically the continent of North America, was created on the back of a turtle, and it intersects with the story of the flood of Noah. And so the idea is that back when everything was perfect, because no capitalism was around and it was just Native Americans, that they all believed that the North American continent was supposed to be called Turtle Island. That's what they referred to it as. I have actually found very little evidence of that being a widespread thing.
Why, that's shocking. That's shocking.
They believed in the myth, but the idea that they actually called the entire continent Turtle Island, I'm finding certainly a lack of evidence. And so, but it works. So they adopt it.
Okay. So Politico has said that Capital Research Center has been briefing the White House, and out of that has come some real major, like there's a major investigation going on by the FBI of all these groups cooperating, along with the Treasury Secretary. His name just went out of my head, but the Treasury Secretary, we're all loving right now. Do you know anything about that you can say?
I don't. I mean, I'm certainly hoping for there to be a wider crackdown, which they keep talking about, and we keep hearing about these reports of, but I have yet to see. We hear of investigations of different nonprofit entities, including those that could be connected to what's happening in New Jersey. But the actual action hasn't happened yet, which is a little surprising, because if you look at the IRS code, the groups that are advocating breaking laws, and they call it civil disobedience, even on the local level, you're not supposed to have tax-exempt status. That goes back to, I believe Scott Walter said it's the 70s. So that's not even a new thing. So the first step of enforcing the law would be, I mean, that would be very welcome. I feel like that's a pretty good starting point.
I think you have them on the run. I do. I think they're, according to, you know, Politico is the voice of the left in D.C. for sure. And they, I think they're a little nervous about what you're doing. And that has to translate to real groups, real threats to those people, like Neville Singham. I think you guys have been working on that. And so is there anything else? I haven't asked you, Ryan, because you've been doing a lot of research. And is there anything else you want to tell us about what's in New Jersey or any of the groups behind them before we say goodbye here?
No, I think that's pretty much it. But one of the things I always recommend people do is you go to Influence Watch. That's the name of the website, and Capital Research Center runs it. And so if you're looking to explain this issue or expose a group and send it to reporters, for example, keep in mind most people don't know what these groups actually are. You go to Influence Watch, and it's written very neutrally with all the sources cited, and that actually is a presentable item that sometimes can get through even people on the left, because it's not branded in any way as a conservative thing, and it really objectively isn't. It's just this nonprofit, and it has right and wing and left wing groups on there. Here's the information that is relevant about this nonprofit, and here's some of the concerning stuff.
So, Influence Watch, and that's been there for years, and it's really well written. You probably do that, Ryan. It's very well written and very charts and things that you can understand. And it's very interesting. It's very interesting. So I echo your recommendation that people look at Influence Watch. Can they find it just by Googling that, or they need to go through the Capital Research Center?
No, you can find it just on Google. And then that way there's no immediate connection back to a conservative entity. And so when you send this to reporters, usually they're thankful. Don't underestimate the power of that.
I would like to think that's true. I was just watching, you know, Kristen Welker interviewing President Trump yesterday on Meet the Press, and she didn't seem very grateful about much. Talk about closed-minded. You know, President Trump knows so much, and he's always right about things. He has such great intellect, and she just acted like she knew more than he did. Pretty disgusting. But I'm going to play that in another show. Ryan Morrow, Senior Counter-Extremism Fellow for the Capital Research Center, an organization the left is afraid of and the right uses. It's the go-to thing for the White House right now, so it's something you'll want to check out. And Ryan's behind a lot of this work. Ryan Morrow started when he was just a young man. It's kind of a cool story, Ryan. When you get my age, you got to write a book, okay?
Yeah, hopefully one day.
Yeah, that would be great. All right, Ryan, thank you so much for your time today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Preborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, meant so many of you have been faithful donors. Just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
What is that, you say? Well, that's the sound of, well, Antifa umbrellas blowing in the wind and losing their shape. That's the sound of tents folding up and being blown over. It's the sound of people, you know. It's just 70-mile-an-hour winds in New Jersey last night at that detention center. And Ryan, and Nick Sorter was the one who discovered that, not Ryan. And he also, in this article that he wrote, when he's exposed what was happening last night, he says, now they're ducking and covering. God is very entertained tonight. Well, I love that. And so I just wanted to mention, because I played that clip earlier, that was what was happening, and it was kind of fun. Because God does intervene. I don't know that was God intervening, but it sure seems. We have known, you know, like back when the British were trying to destroy, in the War of 1812, the Capitol and the White House, it was pretty traumatic. And God sent this, the people in Washington were praying. They were just praying and praying and praying. They were on their knees. And just by word of mouth, no telephones, no email, no people on horses, I suppose. And they were on their knees praying because they had started to burn the White House down. And guess what? This huge storm came over Washington, D.C. in a flash. Winds blowing, lots of rain, wind howling, and the British could not conduct their mischief. They had to leave. And I believe that on that, I do believe, was God's hand. But that's what happened last night in New Jersey. I want to say there's another, I want to recommend this to you. If you are on Twitter, there's a woman who publishes under the name Data Republican. Data Republican. Now, I don't know much about her, but I have heard that she's disabled, but she's brilliant. So she sits there and she researches all the time. So I found some stuff with her about what's happening there that I thought was fascinating. She said there's like all these organizations that Ryan and I talked about a little bit have divided up the duties. One is the strategy, and that's being done by Carlos Saavedra Aini. It's the Aini Institute. COSECA is the dispatch network that's sending out. In fact, they actually called off the whole thing a couple of days ago, at least for a day or two. And just by one missive, I think on Signal, or they may have some private way to get in touch with it, just none of them showed up. Which shows you that if it's just regular spontaneous protesters, that wouldn't have happened. So then the second thing is they have, well, there's a justice bus tour, and that started on March 27th of 2026. It's made six stops across New Jersey. That tour, which ended up, in New Jersey, started 56 days before the hunger strike. So it sounds a little planned, doesn't it? And finally, it is actually planned. Everything is coordinated. Open Society, George Soros. The other thing is like dispatch. They have 200 people materializing at an industrial parking lot in Newark on Tuesday. They have a cell structure borrowed from movement theory. Don't ask me to explain that. They call them circles. They have groups of 3 to 7 people, each with a communication device, and their job is to receive and relay activation messages. It's so organized, it's almost frightening. It really is. And so they have found that 5 of the 6 people arrested by the police were from out of state. They're busing them down, or up, I guess, to New Jersey. So people have been trained. There's a whole training thing. There's War Resisters League. There's a little pamphlet training called Beautiful Trouble Tactical Toolbox. There's one called Ruckus Society, and they learn how to introduce blockades. I could go on and on, and there's money that comes in. The way they supply the goods is amazing. So there has been a reference to the Justice Department of what's happening here and around the country, because these groups go everywhere. Everywhere there's a problem, whether it's Minneapolis or Texas now or wherever, it's the same people protesting. They have a method. They have a way. They have instant signs. They have instant food. It gets delivered. So it's amazing. And that's all been tracked by Data Republicans. So if you want more information on this, go to X and look up Data Republican. I think you'll find her stuff absolutely fascinating. Well, meanwhile, Capital Research Center is actually supplying a lot of this information to the stories that you're seeing written. They're kind of the go-to place, as I said before. And I just really enjoyed talking to Ryan because he's got a lot of information that he's passing on. And they have passed it on to the Treasury Secretary. They've had a lot of briefings in the White House, and things are actually being done. So that's the good news. So we hope a lot of things are going to be done. This is so complex. It's mind-boggling. And when I get into stuff like this, I always wonder, we are only human, and things are getting more and more complex. It's very difficult to figure out all of this and untangle this mess, this tangled web. But God is not too small for it. And so he can't help us. And a lot of people are coming forward, like Ryan Morrow and Data Republican and others, the journalists on the street. They're figuring some things out. We're putting it all together. And I think, but the important thing is for the American people to be aware, not just a few people. And that's why I wanted you to hear what I'm learning. So I think I'm done. I want to tell you again that Preborn is our supporter, our financial supporter. And isn't that great? Has there ever been a better match? I don't think so. So if you'd like to help them to save babies' lives, and really, when I say save women's lives, they do counsel women. They tell them about the love of God and the sacrifice of Jesus and the preciousness of life from a spiritual perspective. And then they give them practical help. They give them all kinds of practical things as they go through their pregnancy and help them along. So it is a, and they also bring the husbands, or maybe just fathers, boyfriends, I don't know. They bring them into the counseling too if they're willing to come. So they do great work. So go to preborn.com/Sandy. All right. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.